Welcome to the Empowerment Zone with Ramona Houston, where we zone in on Black and Brown relations and our journey to empowering our communities.
Hi, good afternoon. Welcome to my podcast. It's June 17th, 2020, and today I have Dr. Mara Perez, and I'm so excited to have her. She's an expert in philanthropy, and she's the founder and principal of Latino Futures, which is a consulting and think tank project, where she works with nonprofit and business leaders to form collaborations and solve many of the challenges that we have in our society. She writes research and position papers, issue briefs, and strategic plans. Her focus is on education, equity and economic vitality, leadership, and philanthropy. And she specifically works with organizations who are focused on serving Latino communities. So I'm so excited to have Dr. Perez here. I actually saw her present at the HACU conference, Hispanic Association of Colleges and Universities, where she shared the four pillars of Latino prosperity, which I really enjoyed hearing her conversation and her perspective on the importance of the empowerment of the Latino community in various facets, various areas. And as you know, that is the purpose of this podcast, is looking at how do we empower the African-American and Latino communities from various various directions, and also looking at us as center of the conversation and seeing us as center of the conversation. And philanthropy is one of those areas that I cover. And so Dr. Perez lives in Northern California, and we're on two different time zones. It is so nice that you got up so early to be a part of this podcast. And thank you so much for joining us, Dr. Perez.
It's my pleasure. Thank you very much for having me, and what a joy to have met you in Chicago last year during the HACU conference and maintain this very fruitful professional relationship. It's a pleasure to see you again.
Thank you. Thank you. So tell us about your work and your evolution into philanthropy, and tell us a little bit about Latino Futures and just about you and your work.
Oh, thank you so much for the opportunity. Again, I'm delighted to be here. And my work centers on building prosperity for the Latino community. And I do so through my practice, which is called Latino Futures. It's, as you said, a consulting practice that I also, where I also do a think tank type of work, meaning a lot of research, a lot of presentations and talks, lectures, classes, etc., with the intention of bringing awareness and information as to how we can continue to build Latino prosperity in the United States in order to build further prosperity for the nation as a whole. And I say that because the Latino community will soon represent 30% of the entire population in the country. The Latino community overall continues to be low income and undersourced. And that's a major national problem, and it should be a strategic priority for the country. Building Latino prosperity in the United States and jumping into it right now is a strategic priority for the nation. And there are many opportunities to move this message forward in places where that awareness already exists and continue to build it. And in particular, in many of the places where that awareness is not yet fully developed. And that includes American institutional philanthropy.
Yes, so tell us about, you talk about building the prosperity of Latino communities. Can you talk about the four pillars of prosperity, of Latino prosperity, and expand on each of those pillars and how they contribute to the prosperity of the Latino community as well as the prosperity of the United States?
Sure. After about 20 years of working as a consultant on the other side, on the side of fund development, focusing mostly on writing grants, developing programs, and developing and proceeding with the process that is evaluating programs and grants for grantees, I switched to the other side, like I said, which is the side of philanthropy and the side of prosperity building through Latino Futures. I made that change about 6 years ago and created Latino Futures. And so in thinking about these, researching these issues and structuring the framework for Latino Futures and Latino Prosperity, I understood to have four main pillars is critical. It doesn't mean they're the only pillars that will be Latino prosperity, but I understood it to be fundamental. That's why I call them pillars. Latino education, of course. It's not just Latino education, it's education period for any group, right? But in this case, Latino education. Latino entrepreneurship, because before COVID, and I'm sure after COVID, the Latino community in the United States was leading the way in terms of numbers of businesses opened in the country on a yearly basis. The Latino community was opening businesses three times faster than any other racial and ethnic group in the United States, including whites, blacks, and any other minorities. Therefore, creating programs that help remove any and all barriers that impede Latinos from building their businesses to the highest potential is essential, because that's prosperity building. Another important pillar is workforce development. There are many studies that show that workforce development programs, for the vast majority of them to date, are really functioning with our 20th century models, which really do not fit the economies of the 21st century, which include high levels of economies and businesses focusing on tech, the gig economy, etc. And also, these institutions, including Pew Research and many others, the Aspen Institute, argue that today the majority of workforce development programs are here. And education is here. It's two separate things. And we really need to think about one whole thread, a continuum, so that when you have students, they are also participating in internships. The companies that bring them on for internships need to see them as their potential employees, which isn't necessarily the case. Need to cultivate their talent, need to provide them with sponsors right there and then during the period of internship, and then hire them. That's a continuum. And they have to also, these companies, have a clear understanding of their own biases, whether there is any kind of institutionalized racism, and get rid of it. Because the fuel of this economy is in the Latino community, in part because the largest percentages of youth are already Latino. And over time, as the white population continues to age, get off the workforce, and not replace themselves through births, the fountain of youth in great part in this nation is going to be coming from the Latino community. If we don't act now, we are really as a nation failing big time. So those are the reasons why this is so important. And Latino philanthropy. If we're working on building accomplishment pathways for Latinos through education, if we're working to build Latino entrepreneurs, their businesses, and remove barriers and make sure that their businesses reach their maximum potential of revenue and success, and if we are creating workforce development programs for the 21st century that understand that cultivating the Latino workforce is strategically sound and further vital for the American economy, then right there we would have an enormous potential of philanthropists. When these Latinos in their different spheres have reached that level of wealth building, financial capacity, they can also be donors and philanthropists. But we don't need to wait, because already now at least in California, spearheaded by the Latino Community Foundation, there is a growing web of Latino giving circles. I'm part of one. And not only are we donors, because we've been donors for a long time, the Latino community is very generous. And the Latino community, the Mexican community, has really kind of kept Mexico going, functioning through remittances. Latino immigrants give everywhere, to the family, to the church, back to their countries. Latinos are generous. One important thing that the Latino Community Foundation is doing now and has been doing for several years is to channel that enormous potential and capacity of giving through more formal vehicles like the giving circles. And we don't function just as donors. One thing that the Latino Community Foundation has done that is so important is remove the veil from the world of philanthropy. Mm-hmm. And it's done so by working with each giving circle in a way that each giving circle functions as a mini foundation. So we ourselves create the giving guidelines, the giving priorities. We put out the calls for proposals by invitation. We vet the submissions. And then we meet with the possible grantees. And then we decide on the grants. We give the grants and we do evaluations of the grants. Those are the functions of a foundation. Latinos participating in this growing web of giving circles are therefore gaining capacity, knowledge, awareness, and expertise in the field of philanthropy. And that's very important. And I do want to say that I haven't done all this work alone. On the contrary, I started by forging a very valuable and ongoing partnership with Dominican University of California, specifically with Dr. Denise Lucy, a great friend and colleague of mine back in 2016 and 2017, when I held the first Latino Futures Forum on the future of Latino philanthropy, sponsored by and in partnership with Dominican University and the Institute for Leadership Studies. Subsequently, I established other partnerships with great colleagues, including Dr. Judy Castro, Marcy Basampour, and Mr. Solomon Delete from John F. Kennedy University. Dr. Judy Castro was in charge of enabling the university to receive Hispanic Serving Institution denomination through a major grant. Mr. Solomon Delete is the director of the Sanford Institute of Philanthropy. And with him now, we are working on developing a call to philanthropic action to increase the levels of Latino education and Latino graduation from college, to reach the levels of white graduation rates and Asian graduation rates in the country, because they're the highest, and to achieve that in a sequence so that when the Latino population represents 30% of the U.S. population, approximately in 2050, we will have achieved the same level of graduation rates to those of the majority, although whites are not going to be the majority at that point. The country is getting very close to being a majority-minority nation. At any rate, so the work of the roadmap continues. I'm also doing a major project with Mr. Omar Carrera at Canal Alliance in San Rafael, California, on developing new ideas for how to foster, enhance, and expand the growth of the Latino community within the work sphere by building newly developed 21st century workforce development programs. And I continue my work with Dr. Denise Lucy at Dominican University, specifically now focusing on developing a research project and followed by program design and delivery for building and expanding opportunities for growth for Latino entrepreneurs in the Bay Area, specifically Northern California, our own county, Marin, Sonoma, and Napa. And now we're in the stages of developing, we've developed the program and the research agenda, and Dr. Denise Lucy with other colleagues from Dominican University and I are now in the process of pursuing funding for this project. So, and I continue to do work in the sphere of Latino philanthropy. Most recently, I did research on giving circles with the Latino Community Foundation, and we created a tool and an issue brief on this subject in order to continue to advance knowledge and create opportunities for other Latinos to join more giving circles and build their expertise then as philanthropists. Those are the four pillars.
Yes, yes. Well, I like that. I like that you expanded on the four pillars, which to repeat are education, entrepreneurship, workforce development, and philanthropy. But also talking about the partnerships that you have, because it has to be a collaboration in all of these sectors in order to really make sure we're successful in our efforts. I want to focus in on philanthropy. I was reading recently in one of your publications that I believe it was 2016 when you did this particular study, that only 1.1% of the giving of all of the foundations, 1.1% went to Latino-run organizations or Latino organizations focused on the Latino community. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't much better for other communities of color in terms of being recipients of philanthropic giving at these foundations. And so that's why it's so important that we build a philanthropic base and be more strategic about our giving in the Black and Brown communities. As you stated before, we do give. We give to our families, right? We're the ones paying for the quinceañeras, right? The bodas, you know, giving back. To giving to our churches, sending back to our home countries, that we are givers in the Latino community and in the Black community. We give to the church, you know, we fund the dance lessons of our nieces, mm-hmm. and we fund education for family members. But we have to be more concerned now with strategic philanthropy in our communities, in empowering our communities. Can you talk more about some recommendations you would have for Latino and African-American communities from an individual and collective perspective on some ideas you have for us to get involved in philanthropy and talk about what a giving circle is, you know, and how to form a giving circle, and mm-hmm. just talk about, and you, beyond just giving circles, what do we need to do to become more involved in philanthropy individually and collectively?
Thank you so much. I'll start briefly with that percentage you offered. That was a number that the 1.1% of institutional philanthropy to Latino-serving, Latino-led non. A number that was derived through research by a project called D5, Diversity 5, which was 5 years of research on diversity to see what the results were in terms of institutional philanthropy supporting nonprofits. They came up with that number, 1.1 to 1.3%, understanding that they only had a certain body of research to work with, which were the foundations that report that level of mm-hmm. data, which is, you know, pretty granular. We might say that if there are others that give that we don't know about, because that level of data is not always provided, 3%, 4%, still. I would say it doesn't reach, or it may at most reach $500 million a year to all Latino-led, Latino-serving organizations throughout the nation, which amounts to almost nothing. Mm-hmm. And that's in part why so many Latino nonprofits struggle to deliver services or struggle to deliver services to larger groups of people because they don't have funding. And there is a lot of research that shows that the burden put on nonprofits led by Latinos and Blacks in the United States by institutional philanthropy is much heavier and harder than the burden put on organizations not led by Blacks or not led by Latinos or serving those communities, typically whites, right? I'm sorry to say it, but that's the nature of the institutional philanthropic establishment. That's how they function. The institutions try to change or at least talk about it, but if you measure year by year, you really have to sit down and say, so what has changed? You've been working at it for years. Nothing has changed. Look at the data. Nothing much has changed. So my recommendations to others like us would include find out if there are giving circles in your area, and learn what they fund, determine whether that suits your philanthropic interests, and join them. If there aren't, create one. There are many publications out there showing what giving circles are like, how they function. They can function in many different ways. They can be tied to an institution like the Latino Giving Circle Network group of the Latino Community Foundation, but they don't have to. The Black community, the Jewish community, the Asian community have created very, very successful giving circle networks. Very successful. So if you Google how they've done it, you can find out. The Latino Community Foundation has a lot of information on its website about the giving circles. You can look at my article on my website, latinofutures.com. There is a section there with publications, and there you will see the article I wrote about the Latino Giving Circle Network of the Latino Community Foundation, and there is a history, the evolution of it. Mainly, I would say, find people that share your interests. Is it education of children, education of adults? Is it lifelong learning? Is it social justice, the environment, whatever it is? Figure out what your core interests are that you want to support financially and see if there are any giving circles around you. And if there aren't, talk with your peers, people that you know share your interests, do a little research, figure out how to create a giving circle and do it. Mainly, those people will pool their own money into the circle and then identify organizations they want to support. Some go through a very formal process of soliciting proposals, reviewing proposals, with very specific guidelines, evaluation program design requests within the guidelines, etc. Others are a little more informal. So figure out also how formal you want to be, or whether you want to be working with a group of people, pool money together, and make a donation, maybe instead of a formal grant, to a specific organization. It's really not that hard, and it can be tailored to your specific desires and abilities. Maybe you put $10, maybe you put $1,000, maybe you put $200,000, maybe you put $1,000,000. It depends on who you are and your capacity and interests. The Giving Circle of the Latino Community Foundation that I refer to a lot because I have so much respect for the effort and because I'm a part of the circle. I'm not a part of the foundation. I'm not on staff. The minimum requirement is $1,000 per person. So we know that we have to put $1,000 at least or more, and many of us put more depending on our own ability, depending on how you did financially on a given year, etc. And so then we think very carefully. We've got our own specific guidelines, our own specific area of concentration in terms of the kinds of organizations we support. And then we put out requests for proposals through invitations. It's not an open process in our case. And the whole process takes several months, but it's formal and it's highly effective. So I would say start small. If you don't want to go the formal route, at a minimum, talk with your friends and set up a circle. I know other people that have done that. I know people in Berkeley. I knew someone in Berkeley who has since passed, but she was the one who started a giving circle, not a Latina, not a Black person, a white person with great interest in the environment. Back then, it was, and it still is, more so now, very important, climate change. She started this in, I don't know, 10, 15 years ago with friends. And it was a great cause, and besides, it's a magnificent way to socialize. Mm-hmm. You are talking with people with whom you have affinity, talking about interests, issues that are of interest to you, and you feel productive. You have a nice glass of wine, try to solve the problems on planet Earth, and actually do something good. So there are many good things about it. I highly recommend giving circles.
Yes, thank you so much for that recommendation and explaining what giving circles are all about. You know, all we need to do is just get some friends who believe in the same things and want to be problem solvers instead of just discussing it, put our money together and give to a cause or an organization that is doing the work that we think is valuable. And we can do that anywhere. So as Dr. Perez said, please look up Giving Circle in your community, and you can find some way to start, get some advice, and just get your friends together and start participating in strategic philanthropy. That's what we're talking about, is strategic philanthropy and making a big impact. Well,
and if they don't do that, they can also just find out what organizations they value in the immediate community, in another state, wherever. And send a check as a donation. They can also do that as individuals. As individuals, we have many ways to contribute through giving circles. As individual donors, we can support the foundation that does work that we believe in. We can volunteer. If we don't have the money, or if we feel like doing something other than just giving money, you can also volunteer. And that's extremely important and extremely needed, particularly in times like the ones we're living in, where there are so many social issues that are and have become extraordinarily clear. If anybody had blinders on before, they cannot have that excuse now. There is no way. Right? I mean, it's like these are the main issues of the nation. These are the main issues, I believe, of the century. And we better fix them now because we haven't for a couple hundred years. And that is on us as a society. So there are many ways to support an organization or a cause, donate or volunteer or advocate, write to your congressman and keep pushing the envelope. Keep saying, no, this isn't right. Or do not buy products from companies that you believe are doing the wrong thing. For example, companies that you know are not necessarily hiring in the ways in which they should. Look at the Silicon Valley. Google is wonderful. Facebook is great. But if you look at the diversity issues they have, maybe, I don't know, don't have a Facebook account. Or I don't know. There are always ways to make a point and to make a contribution, whether by funding something or by not supporting something. Those are your own choices. You've got choices.
Thank you for telling us about those choices, and thank you so much for joining us today. I have so much more I'd love to discuss with you, so I hope you will come back and join us again. And thank you for sharing your expertise. Now, if anybody wants to contact you or find more about your, read some of your publications, can you share the name of your website again, as well as any social media platforms that you are on where our audience can follow you?
Sure. They can look me up, Mara Perez, PhD, Latino Futures, on LinkedIn, on Instagram, or Twitter. And they can also find me at www.latinofutures.com. Again, www.latinofutures.com. That's my website where they can find most of my publications. They can watch videos from presentations I've given or forums I have facilitated. And they can also take a look at the Roadmap to Latino Prosperity, which is a document that is valuable in many ways. You can take it, you can customize. If you're thinking about building prosperity for your community, you can use it as it is by following the model and the pillars and the prosperity recommendations, or take it, adjust it to the lens that would support further your community and still use the framework that we provide in this prosperity building document. So you're welcome to look at it, but you're also welcome to download it, use it, adapt it. It's yours. And that's why I created it, so that it can be a tool that anyone can put to use to build prosperity in their immediate and not so immediate communities. Let's all build prosperity. And when I say prosperity, I don't only mean financial prosperity. I mean, and I always write in my publications, socioeconomic prosperity, because being healthy is as important as being wealthy. So we need that. One thing reinforces the other. A prosperous community means a community that has fair and equitable housing, where students are treated equally in the schools, where workforce development programs do not discriminate on the basis of race and ethnicity, and where philanthropy supports organizations equitably. So socioeconomic prosperity is what I always refer to.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for expanding on what prosperity means. It's not just about money. It's a holistic perspective in terms of prosperity. Thank you, Dr. Mara Perez, for joining us today. We look forward to having you again in the near
future. Thank you. It's a pleasure to see you, and thank you so much for this opportunity. Have a wonderful day. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Hi, it is June 17th, 2020, and I have as my guest today, Dr. Mara Perez from Northern California, and she's going to give us her piece of advice for strategies for college success. Now that she's Dr. Perez, I'm sure she has a lot of information she can give students, but I've asked her for one piece of advice. Dr. Perez, can you tell us about what schools you attended and what degrees you earned? And then tell us your strategy for college success.
Thank you so much for having me. It's wonderful to see you and to be on your podcast. I attended Rutgers University for undergraduate school, where I earned a bachelor's degree in anthropology, cultural anthropology specifically. And then I went to graduate school for two different degrees. First, a master's degree in Latin American studies. I went to the University of Chicago, very prestigious institution, and I earned there my master's in Latin American studies and continued on at the University of Chicago for my doctorate in sociology, which I completed in 1998. And one piece of advice, which to choose. I would say, make sure you have at least one professor that fully believes in you and is willing to be your sponsor, is willing to give you advice and help you succeed. So find that professor, cultivate that relationship, be the absolute best you can be in school, get the top grades that you can, aim for the maximum, and always have a professor that will know who you are, will understand your talents, and will want you to succeed.
Thank you. Find a professor that can be an advocate for you. That's what you need. That can help advise you, direct you, and then provide opportunities for you. Great piece of advice. We know in order to succeed in college, you need professors on your side. So find you that professor and cultivate that relationship. Thank you so much, Dr. Perez.
It's my pleasure. Thank you, and good luck to all students.
Thank you.
Thank you.
A special thank you to the incredible team of the Empowerment Zone. Terry Ungully, theme song, NADWORKS, digital support, and of course, our featured guest.